Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 48 degrees and overcast. Today's Monday, June 18th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Soccer is now an official varsity sport in Sitka. The school board approved varsity boys and girls teams for next year at its meeting last Thursday night. Now they just have to figure out how to pay for it. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Leon Claire will be a junior next year at Sitka High School. She dances and plays some musical instruments, and when her friends suggested 2 years ago that she try soccer, well, she wasn't sure.
I didn't know I would ever be a sporty person, but I know soccer's the only sport the majority of the team does play in high school, and I just think that that experience and just being together, playing as a team, and learning those skills is really important.
The Sitka School District approved soccer as a sport in 2009. It established a co-ed team which found itself playing against other high schools whose players were usually boys.
It's really fun playing against guys, but it's definitely intimidating sometimes, especially the other team. And it's just there's a difference between guys and girls, how they play. And so I definitely think that that is a big factor that's keeping a lot of girls from playing, which is sad.
But Claire says she hopes that with two teams, more girls might be encouraged to play. Soccer supporters have been lobbying the school district for that for a couple years now. They've argued that a growing program deserves district support, including in funding. In 2009, soccer had between 25 and 30 kids. Last season, more than 45 played.
You know, they made very persuasive arguments.
Lon Garrison is the school board president. He said he had some concerns, not with the program itself, but with the district's overall activities.
We do phenomenal things with activities. Our kids are able to do a lot of activities, especially for the size of school we have. My real concern is, do we have adequate staff, especially with regard to administration, to be on site like we want them to supervise what's going on.
Garrison says he's also concerned about the amount of time students spend away from the classroom, traveling to and from events. And then there's money. The school board cut $50,000 from activities during the last budget cycle. They added it back in on Thursday night in order to cover travel to state tournaments. Success, as it turns out, gets expensive in Alaska, especially when it means taking a team to other Southeast communities or to Anchorage. In 2010, various school activities paid more than $200,000 to Alaska Airlines. Another $54,000 went to the state ferry system. The district funds a portion of that, and the rest comes from fundraising and donations from area businesses. And although soccer received varsity recognition, the board has not decided how to fund it. Garrison says right now the pie is only so big, and the question is whether to slice the pie differently or to bake a bigger pie and add to the budget.
If we add to the budget, where do we subtract from the budget? We don't have extra revenue coming in, so that's my problem. If we're laying off reading specialists or, you know, cutting back on academic activities, and yet we're going to add more money to the budget because of varsity sports, that doesn't mesh well with my priorities, but we need to hear from the community on that.
The school board formed a committee to look at activities and to get community feedback, but the meetings were poorly attended and the committee was dissolved. The conversation will still happen, but probably in conjunction with overall conversations about educational funding. Garrison says the earliest the board will probably talk about funding for soccer is when it next meets in August. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Coast Guard cutter Maple got a new commander at a ceremony Thursday evening. Lieutenant Commander Fred Seaton took over from Lieutenant Commander Daniel Gray. Gray had served as captain of the cutter for 3 years. At the ceremony, Rear Admiral Thomas P. Ostebo congratulated the crew of the Maple for their service.
Maple, under Commander Gray's leadership, was known as the quiet ship, a ship that is humble. She simply got the job done.
Ostebo noted that in 2010, the Maple single-handedly covered the entire West Coast during a period when all other Coast Guard cutters were called to the Gulf of Mexico to respond to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill.
This ship did whatever the nation asked of her, and she did it with aplomb. She is, in fact, the best black-hulled ship in the Coast Guard.
Outgoing Commander Gray is headed to the Joint Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia. The new commander, Fred Seaton, was most recently the operations officer on the Seattle-based cutters Polar Star and Polar Sea. You can find photos from the change of command ceremony on our website, kcaw.org. The man charged in the deaths of two Hoonah police officers has been declared competent to stand trial. John Marvin Jr. is accused of shooting Matt Tokuoka and Tony Wallace 2 summers ago, then holding police at bay in a 24-hour standoff. The case was heard earlier this week, or last week rather, in Juneau by Superior Court Judge David George. He told Marvin's attorney that it's clear he sometimes has trouble communicating with his client, but George said evidence provided by two psychologists doesn't show a mental disease or defect. KTOO's Matt Miller has more on what's next for Marvin and the reactions to George's ruling.
Haley Tokuoka, wife of fallen officer Matt Tokuoka, is relieved that there may be justice after all.
I was just very happy. I just said yay because I feel like we're moving forward, and once this is over, our family can move on.
Marvin faces murder and weapons misconduct charges for the August 2010 killing of Tokuoka and fellow Hoonah officer Tony Wallace. Marvin also allegedly held other law enforcement officers in a standoff for nearly 24 hours after the shooting. Judge George is the same judge who in January declared Marvin incompetent after getting opinions from 3 psychologists. He believed that Marvin understood the nature of the charges against him, but he could not adequately help his attorney with his defense. At the time, Judge George committed Marvin to the Alaska Psychiatric Institute in Anchorage. The judge explained that the latest hearing was a statutorily required review. Dr. Lois Michaud, a forensic psychologist at API, said Marvin understands the court process. She believes that Marvin is not delusional and is competent to stand trial.
I believe there is a strong indication that when Mr. Marvin begins to talk about his version of things, I believe that he is not being forthright. I believe there's a strong possibility that he could be malingering.
Dr. Martin Spurbeck had earlier determined that Marvin would be incompetent because he could not provide relevant testimony or help his attorney with crucial facts. But Monday, Spurbeck said he had another view after another evaluation.
He remains guarded, oppositional, very controlling. He comes across as very gamey in the sense that, throw information out and then retract it and then smile, that type of thing. It was clear that Mr. Marvin was intentionally refusing to participate. He would go so far and then intentionally not provide any additional information.
Spurbeck said Marvin suffers from delusional paranoid disorder with overtones of grandiose and persecuted feelings.
He is obviously not a normal person.
A few members of the Marvin family appeared in Juneau Superior Court on Monday to observe the proceedings, but they were not available afterward to answer questions. Haley Tokuoka and her niece, accompanying her for moral support, also watched from the courtroom gallery. Tokuoka says it's been especially hard for her children, now ages 3 and 8. She said both watched Wallace, a best friend to the family, go down. Tokuoka said they moved to Juneau for the availability of health care for her children.
They have attachment disorders. They're happy kids, but they have attachment disorders and anxiety issues and post-traumatic stress disorders because they were there and will not go to school. I have to homeschool because of all this, but we're making progress and we will be very happy once this is all over.
The next hearing in the case is scheduled for October 15th with a jury trial planned to start October 22nd. It's expected to last 2 weeks. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
2 former employees of the Alaska Coastal Management Program debated in front of a packed house at the Juneau Chamber of Commerce on Thursday. They were discussing a measure on the August primary ballot that would reestablish the federally funded program. It gives the state oversight of permitting activities along its coastline. Casey Kelly has more.
Former State Commissioner of Environmental Conservation Kurt Fredrickson co-chairs the recently formed Vote No on 2 campaign, but but he made it clear he's not against the state asserting its influence over coastal development.
Whether it's called coastal management or some other form, clearly I believe Alaska needs a stronger voice in federal decision-making.
In fact, Fredrickson held up a piece of paper on which he'd written a wish list of what he'd like to see in a coastal management program. It included many of the same ideas talked about by his debate opponent, Juneau Representative Beth Kurtula. But Fredrickson said he finds ballot measure 2 problematic. Namely, the measure would establish a coastal policy board that does not include anyone from the governor's office, and the board's other representatives would no longer be elected officials from coastal regions.
In the past, I worked on the Alaska Coastal Policy Council. I was a member. I was a staff member to it. I had a lot of experience with the Coastal Policy Board. One of the beauties of that board was it was locally elected officials. Locally elected officials sat on that board, and they were accountable to the citizens of their communities.
Kurtula, a coastal management attorney before becoming a lawmaker, countered that members of the board would be nominated by elected officials in their communities, and the governor would ultimately make the appointments. Plus, she said the policy board would include 4 commissioners.
How it works is the commissioners will meet with the governor. They'll be talking to this governor before they make a decision, so the governor's voice will be heard. But it will work in a way that Alaskans can come together for the final resolution on development.
That's KTOO's Casey Kelly reporting. Voters will decide whether ballot measure 2 ultimately becomes law. The initiative is on the August 28th primary ballot. So on weather forecast today for Sitka and PA, calls for cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, isolated showers this morning, highs around 55, northwest winds 10 miles per hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.